Welcome to Torah Imecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Lynn Kraft, and today we will be learning Melachim Aleph Perek Chaf. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Bet Amud Bet, says the following. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, Mipnei ma zacha Achav l'machod 22 shana? Why did Achav merit to rule for 22 years? Mipnei shekibid et ha-Torah shenitna be'esrim ushtayim otio. Rabbi Yochanan answers this question because he honored the Torah, which has 22 letters. Based on what we know about Achav from the past several Prakim and Melachim Aleph, however, it doesn't exactly seem that Achav has honored the Torah at all. In fact, he worshipped Avodah Zarah and introduced it to the entire kingdom of Bnei Israel. He may have been inspired at Har HaKarmel for a moment by Eliyahu's demonstration of Hashem's power and allowed Bnei Israel to kill the Nevi'ei Baal, but as soon as he got home, he went right back to going along with Izebel and her Avodah Zarah. Achav seems to have never honored the Torah. What is Rabbi Yochanan referring to exactly? In fact, Rabbi Yochanan's statement is based on the events of this perek. In order to understand his statement, let's analyze the sequence of events of Perek Chaf. In Pasuk Aleph, we're told that Ben-Hadad Melech Aram, who had previously attacked Baasha Melech Yisrael at Asa Melech Yehuda's request, had come back again, as we said he would. He gathered support from 32 other local kings, and together they besieged Shomron, the capital city of Malchut Yisrael. Ben-Hadad then sent messengers to Achav to make demands from him, to which Achav responded in the affirmative. Ben-Hadad then sent messengers again to Achav a second time to make demands from him again, to which Achav responded again, but in the negative. There are two different approaches to understanding this conversation between Ben-Hadad Melech Aram and Achav, especially since Ben-Hadad seems to repeat his request twice, and yet Achav seems to change his response the second time. What's going on here? According to the Pshat, their conversation goes as follows. Ben-Hadad tells Achav, "Your silver and gold are mine, and your wives and sons are mine." Achav responds to this request, "Okay, fine. I and all I have are yours," meaning I acknowledge your sovereignty over my kingdom, and I agree to serve you and pay you tribute. It seems that Achav interpreted Ben-Hadad's request at first as a demand that Achav recognize his military superiority and pay him a tax as a vassal king, while allowing Achav to run the internal affairs of his country independently. Ben-Hadad then sends messengers back to Achav, demanding, "Give me your silver, your gold, your wives, and your sons. If you don't, my servants will come tomorrow and search your house and take everything of value." This, it seems, was no longer a request for vassal status, but rather a sign of aggression. Ben-Hadad was asking for complete surrender. This was, in essence, a proclamation of war. Since this posed an existential threat, Achav consulted his advisors, who agreed with him that this actually was an existential threat. So Achav responded to Ben-Hadad that your first request, i.e. my gaining vassal status and paying you tribute, that I can do, but I cannot agree to your second request. Ben-Hadad then responds by boasting about his upcoming victory against Achav, to which Achav responded that one who puts on armor, i.e. one who is talking before the war even begins, should not boast like one who takes the armor off, i.e. like one who is at the end of the war, once he already knows who has won. According to the Pshat interpretation, therefore, what motivated Achav and his cabinet to refuse to acquiesce to Ben-Hadad's demands was a sense of national pride. He was upholding the political value of national autonomy. According to the Midrash, however, their conversation went a little differently. According to Chazal, Ben-Hadad's first request was, "Your silver and gold are mine, and your wives and sons are mine." And this Chazal interpreted already as an act of aggression, of complete and all-out war. And Achav responded, "Okay, that's fine. I and all that I have are yours." They claim that Achav was willing to accept complete destruction, even though it would cost him everything dear to him. To which Ben-Hadad then responded a second time, demanding that Achav give him all of his silver, his gold, his wives, and his sons, saying that if he didn't, Ben-Hadad's servants would come tomorrow and search Achav's house and take everything of value. This, according to Chazal, everything of value was referring to the Sefer Torah. This was no longer a personal humiliation of the king, but a national humiliation of Bnei Israel as a whole, a stealing of its national symbol. Ben-Hadad was not anymore proposing to attack just Achav, were even B'nai Yisrael physically, but now the spiritual roots of B'nai Yisrael are what he was trying to get at. And when Ahav faced this kind of existential threat, he discovered that what mattered most to him was his Jewish identity. Just like today, you know, there are many secular people who discover their spiritual roots when in critical danger. And so the upcoming victory, as we'll see, was therefore a reward for Ahav's display of correct values. According to Chazal's interpretation here, what motivated Ahav to refuse to acquiesce to Ben-Hadad's demands was a sense of what's important religiously. Even Ahav, according to Chazal, had an innate sense of the Torah's importance. This demonstrates that according to the Medrash, Ahav always held dear to certain religious principles and didn't completely forget about Hashem. This is what Rabbi Yochanan is referring to in his statement in the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Kufbet Amud Bet, that Ahav honored the Torah that was written with 22 letters and therefore merited to reign for 22 years. Either way we interpret these psukim, it's clear that Hashem wanted Ahav to win, either as a reward for upholding religious values, or, as the Navi explained to him in Pasuk Yud Gimel, to take advantage of an opportunity to teach Ahav about Hashem. As the Navi told Ahav, "V'yadata ki ani Hashem," you will win so that you acknowledge that you are aware that I am God. This is actually very similar to the educational goal that Hashem had for Paro during the first three makot. In Shmot Perek Zayin Pasuk Yud Zayin, Moshe tells Paro right before Makadam, "Bizot teda ki ani Hashem." Hashem is bringing these makot so that you know that He exists. Hashem wanted Ahav and Paro to be aware of Hashem's existence. When the Navi told Ahav that he would be victorious, Ahav responded only by asking how to fight. And he then followed the Navi's advice, despite the fact that it didn't really seem to be a very sound strategic plan to send a small band of soldiers to attack the entire standing Aramean army, plus the 32 other kings and their armies. Yet, Ahav followed Hashem's advice against all odds, and they won. Because a small band of soldiers surprised the drunken Aramean army, who had assumed that such a small contingent of people were unarmed and merely attempting to escape the besieged city. After this defeat, Ben-Hadad's generals explained their defeat to Ben-Hadad in polytheistic terms. They claimed that B'nai Israel only won because their God is powerful on the mountains. Recall that Eliyahu and Hashem's victory over the Nevi'i Baal atop Har HaKarmel occurred on a mountain. But they claimed if we wage war against them in the valley, we'll surely win. Of course, we know that Hashem is all-powerful everywhere, but Ben-Hadad and his generals were polytheistic in their outlook, and they believed that God's powers were limited to certain geographies and in particular locales. As the Navi then explained to Ahav in Pasuk Chavchet, now that Aram had so gravely misunderstood Hashem and his abilities, Hashem wanted Ahav to be victorious against them not only to prove his existence to Ahav, but to prove his existence to Aram as well. The Navi says, "V'idatem ki ani Hashem," so that you will all know that I am God. And of course, B'nai Yisrael won yet again. This time, Aram's defeat was so complete that Ben-Hadad was forced into hiding underground to save his life. As the general military practice in the ancient Near East was for the victorious king to kill the defeated king in order to consolidate his victory over that nation. Once in hiding, however, Ben-Hadad's officials realized that perhaps they could save their king by leveraging the rachamim, the mercy that the kings of Israel were known to have. They said, "Hinena shamanu ki malchei bei Yisrael ki malchei chasadim." Behold, we have heard that the kings of the house of Israel are kings of loving kindness. How ironic that the kings of Yisrael were known to have rachamim, and yet Hashem's Navi didn't like the concept of rachamim at all. Ben-Hadad's officials, therefore, came up with a plan that they all, including Ben-Hadad, would approach Ahav dressed up like prisoners of war, as if to say, "We know we would be deserving of death if not for your mercy." And in the end, their plan worked. Ahav not only saved Ben-Hadad, but he even called him Achi, my brother. The question is, was this a smart move on the part of Ahav to save Ben-Hadad and let him go alive? From an economic perspective, perhaps it was a smart move, because Malchut Yisrael gained a lot of land back that had previously been taken from them by Ben-Hadad's father, and they also gained export rights to Damascus, which assumedly improved their economy. From a political perspective, however, it was definitely not a good move, because Ben-Hadad waged war against Ahav again, as we're told in Perek Chaf Bet, and succeeded in killing Ahav. From a religious perspective, we know that it was the wrong move as well, as a Navi rebuked Ahav at the end of the Perek in two different ways. First, a Navi told his friend, "Hashem has commanded you to hit me, but his friend refused to hit him. The Navi then responded to his friend that because he didn't listen to the word of Hashem, he would be killed by a lion. And he was then, in fact, killed by a lion. Rashi explains that this entire episode and conversation between the Navi and his friend was actually a message for Achav. For Achav had been commanded by Hashem to kill Ben-Hadad, but just as the Navi's friend refused to listen, so too Achav didn't listen, and he let Ben-Hadad go unharmed. And so he would be killed for not listening to Hashem's command, just like the Navi's friend was killed by a lion for not listening to Hashem's command. The Navi then proceeded to ask someone else to hit him in the name of Hashem, who obliged and wounded him. The Navi then disguised himself further by putting ash upon his eyes so that Achav wouldn't recognize him, and he waited for Achav to pass by along the road. When Achav did so, the Navi called out to him, asking the king to pass judgment for him, as was the king's role. The Navi claimed to Achav that as he was leaving battle, a man had asked him to keep guard over a fugitive for him. And this man said that if the fugitive escaped, he would either kill this man or make him pay for his loss. The Navi then claimed to the king that he, the next day, went about his daily activities and the fugitive escaped. The king responded with his judgment, and he said, "Such is your sentence, i.e. you should either be killed or be made to pay, for so have you decreed upon yourself by agreeing to guard the fugitive in the first place." The Navi then quickly removed the ash covering his eyes so that Achav recognized him as a Navi Hashem. And the Navi then proclaimed, "Ko Amar Hashem, so says Hashem, just as you sent away my fugitive, Ben-Hadad, when you should have kept guard over him, so too will you be killed for it." Through the Navi's two messages of rebuke to Achav, it became clear that Hashem was very angry with Achav for sending Ben-Hadad away, since really Ben-Hadad was Hashem's prisoner, not Achav's. Hashem was the one who won the war, not Achav. Therefore, by granting Ben-Hadad life and benefiting economically from the move, Achav was really putting himself before Hashem and mitigating Hashem's role in the victory. In this way, the war that Hashem had waged in order to teach Achav and Aram about Hashem's existence did not serve the religious role it was meant to, because he let Ben-Hadad go and the victory was not considered complete. Therefore, as the Navi told Achav, Hashem was going to punish him for sending Ben-Hadad away by substituting Achav's death for Ben-Hadad's death and Bnei Israel's defeat for Aram's defeat. Achav responded to this rebuke with despondency. We're told that he was sar v'za'if. He was despondent and angry. Interestingly, he didn't even think to punish this Navi for what he'd said against him, though, demonstrating that perhaps Achav finally did accept Nevuat Hashem. Perhaps this might also be understood in light of what Rabbi Yochanan said in the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Kuf Bet Amud Bet, that Achav honored the Torah. Just as the Torah represents Ritzon Hashem, so too do Hashem's Nevi'im. In fact, Nevi'i Hashem feature three times in this parak, and Achav recognized and responded to their words each time. It even seems like the Nevi'i Hashem played a central role in Achav's court in this parak, to the extent that they twice gave the king advice, which he followed despite the fact that that advice wasn't very logical or strategic, and once the Navi delivered rebuke, which he even internalized. This is in stark contrast to the depiction of Achav's kingdom in the beginning of Perek Yudchet, when we're told that the Nevi'i Hashem had to hide from Yizevel because she threatened to kill them, and that they were only saved due to the help of Achav's servant Ovadia, who kept them alive by providing them with food while they were hiding in their caves. It seems that something had indeed changed in the palace since then, and that Yizevel no longer had the same influence upon Achav and the royal kingdom as she had then. In fact, we never see Nevi'i Baal in the palace again after the Har HaKarmel showdown. Perhaps Eliyahu's actions atop Har HaKarmel generated a greater impact on Achav than he had originally thought, for it seems that Achav now respected Ritzon Hashem more than he used to. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilai Nishmat, Malka Esther, Batzvi Yosef.